Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
It is this business of suet and gelatin. I just think we need to move on a little bit from having meat in desserts. If I'm having dessert, I really don't want that to be my meat course, but that's just a personal thing.
Well, welcome back to the Bake Down podcast for our review of the 2020 Bake Off quarter final. You're listening to Josh Landy, founder of Bake With A Legend, the company that gives you the chance to bake alongside former Bake Off stars. And you can now do this from anywhere in the world with our virtual classes. If you are still to join us for an online class, then what are you waiting for? We've got new classes up this week, including Howard Middleton teaching custard creams and fig rolls on November 22nd, which is going to be fantastic. And our hugely popular chocolate Yule log class with Dan Beasley Harling has required a fourth date due to popularity. And you can catch that on December the 19th, just ahead of Christmas. Remember to use the code podcast to get 10% off all bookings. Whilst we'd also love to hear from you if you're thinking about getting a group together online for some team building, a family get together, or a virtual Christmas party. Now, it was a classic bake-off theme this time around, Desserts Week, and 2015 finalist Ian Cumming returned to the podcast to join Howard, Jane and I to reflect on another enjoyable week in the tent that saw a remarkable showstopper. We're 8 episodes down, just 2 to go, sadly. We hope you enjoy the episode and we'll have another one for you next Wednesday. Hello and welcome back to episode 8 of the Bake Down podcast. We have reached the quarterfinal stage here in 2020. Just 5 bakers left, all trying to get through dessert week and make it through to the semi-finals. I am joined, as ever, by Howard Middleton and Jane Beadle. And I'm pleased to say making a return to the podcast is Ian Cumming. Ian, you're live with us from Cambridge in your kitchen, I can see once again.
Yes, once again, sitting here is where I tend to live these days.
Well, we all sadly here in the UK, I know a lot of our listeners are in America, we are sadly back in a lockdown situation, but gladly we can all bake at home. I'm wondering, Howard, if there's going to be another run on flour in this next 4-week period. What do you think? Are we going to struggle to get hold of flour and eggs as the nation goes back to baking?
Oh, I really hope not. I mean, I think, you know, there are sort of warnings up in supermarkets about not kind of hoarding and things like that. But yeah, to be perfectly honest, I have, because we've been doing so many kind of Bake With A Legend classes, I have got quite a decent supply of flour at the moment. It's just going to be eggs and butter, really. So yeah, I should be okay on at least part of the ingredients.
And Jane, I know in your cookery school close to you in Faversham, you've been doing some classes, particularly over half term. It must be quite sad for you to have to sort of close the doors during the next 4 weeks.
Oh, yeah, it was really sad, especially, you know, we just got going. We had a really good half term. We had quite a lot of kids there because it's mentally busy. And then people had started booking classes. It was a slow trickle, but they were booking classes, especially in the run-up to Christmas. And then we've had to shut the doors again. So, yes, sad, but, you know, I'm not going to moan about it because I'm in a much more fortunate position. I'm a oldie with a retired husband, so I'm all right. It's everybody else who's struggling, certainly in the hospitality business. So it's sad for me, but it's desperate for other people, so I'm not going to moan about that one.
No, that's very, very fair. And look, we will continue to try and keep morale up for all those that want to do online baking with us. We have now been doing it incredibly. 6 months have flown by, 7 months really, of online classes. And we continue to put new classes up. We are doing a lot of Christmas parties or team building. So if we can cheer you up with an event, then do let us know. I've even roped Jane in to teach a donut class for my family for Hanukkah, the Jewish festival where it's very traditional to eat oily food such as donuts. So we look forward to doing that. Now, we have a couple of questions, and this one is slightly out of the box, Howard. So I will come to you on it.
I'm in charge of out of the box questions.
Yeah, this one is from Grace in Florida. I found the show when it aired on Netflix. I loved having these last two seasons come weekly so I can listen to the podcast with you after I watch the episode on Friday. Thank you for your insight. I look forward to joining you for a virtual class soon. Here's my question. Is a gherkin just a generic name for what we call a pickle in the US, or is it a specific type?
Oh, that's interesting. I don't know, to be honest. I thought it was a very small kind of pickled... it's part of the cucumber family, but I don't think it's... I don't think it's particularly different to a kind of dill pickle, which I think is what they're quite often called in the USA. So we call them gherkins, but I think it's more or less the same as a dill pickle.
But very small.
Yeah.
But very small. Yeah, I don't know. They call them cornichons in France, apparently. But they taste exactly the same. They seem flavoured pretty much the same as the big dill pickles. I don't know whether, Ian, can you cast any light?
I'm just trying to think about this. I mean, for some reason, my 13-year-old daughter has suddenly got a passion for cornichons. Slightly unusual taste, maybe for a teenage girl, but there we go. So, yes, they are diddy little things. I kind of imagine the gherkin's bigger than a cornichon, but we'll all have to find out about our pickled cucumbers, clearly.
I've just Googled it, actually, and gherkins look bigger than cornichon. I'll give you that. I think it's just a generic term for a type of cucumber, I think. But we got to know them over here as being relatively small.
This email comes from Lauren in Pennsylvania. Hello, we really enjoy your podcast. In a recent podcast, you discussed the climate in the tent, sometimes hot, sometimes cold. My question is, why do you think Bake Off is even held in a tent? Why not hold it in a building where the climate could be better controlled? I don't know. We can all have some thoughts on this. Ian, can you imagine have gone into a building, not a tent? Why do you think they've gone for a tent?
I guess it's going for the sort of classic English village show kind of feel to it, really, isn't it? You know, your sort of summer marquee. You know, we will hold the village show, whatever the weather. I mean, we certainly in the first couple of weeks of ours, we had heaters in the tent, but certainly no way of cooling it, which, yeah, clearly at times is would have been much appreciated recently.
Did they turn the heaters off once they started filming in? Because they did for us, because the sound of the fan was picked up on the microphone. So they put it on before they actually went, you know, started filming properly, so that it took the edge off the chill. Did they do that for you?
I think they did, yes. I think that's right. And I do remember when it came to judging, it was still off, obviously. And I remember one or two bakers sitting there behind their benches, actually with the ovens turned on and the door open, just to keep themselves vaguely warm in this brassic tent.
Well, Mary Berry used to sit there with a hot water bottle.
That's right. She did, didn't she? Oh, yeah. The crew would always be refreshing her water bottle for her, which, fair enough, really.
Howard, do you remember any hot water bottles being seen in your year?
I do. Mary had one down the back of her trousers. Well, underneath her jacket, anyway, and some little hand warmers as well. But I think on the tent business, I wonder as well whether there's a little bit of the aspect that in the very first series in the UK, it travelled around the country. So it went to kind of places like Melton Mowbray and sort of Bakewell and places like that. And I suppose it was that combination of a travelling show and also, as Ian says, this kind of idyll of a village show as well. So, and I think they just essentially have got stuck with the image, and it's now part of the kind of iconography of Bake Off, really.
Well, I hope that answers your question. Lauren, thank you so much for supporting the podcast from Pennsylvania. We look forward to having you join for online classes very soon. Now, let's get stuck into this episode. Howard, you weren't sure about the 1980s theme last week, but Desserts Week, were you back on safer ground? This is a classic week.
Yes, I am. I absolutely love it when they do weeks that are different, you know, that introduce us to something like Japanese Week, for instance. But I just felt 1980s wasn't a kind of high point in the sort of baking history, really. Not for me, anyway. But yes, desserts, lovely. Yeah, absolutely.
And look, Howard, we'll start with you, because I know that we've been discussing mini cheesecakes directly, because you are doing a class in December on Bake with the Legend for just this. So 12 mini cheesecakes for the signature, a baked filling. They had to make the base from scratch. So me and my wife turned to each other and said, they can't just crush up some digestive biscuits that were placed in front of them, sadly.
No, and I think when you do sort of cheesecakes on Bake Off, it is a bit of an extended process, because you have to not only make the biscuits and then crush them and make the base for the for your cheesecake, but you're having to do that within a certain amount of time. If you were doing this at home, you could possibly make the biscuits in advance, and then when you want to make a cheesecake, you crush them up, rather than trying to bake them and crush them within the same period of time. But we're going to do that in the class, online class, so yeah.
Is your class the one with that cute little gingerbread background and the square of cheesecake?
It is, yeah.
I saw it yesterday for the first time. It looks utterly adorable, just like you, Howard.
Thank you. Well, it's one that I did on one of the Bake Off Christmas special, so I thought it'd be quite nice to do as a Christmas bake, really.
Oh, I thought, I think it looks lovely, Howard. I might join you.
You'd be very welcome. Now, Ian, if I remember rightly, in your dessert week, was your showstopper cheesecake related? Is that right?
It was. Yeah. No, it was interesting to see that. I have to say, back again, really. We had the difference was we had to do a tier of three baked cheesecakes, and it was a showstopper. So, you know, they had to be much bigger. Baked cheesecakes, and they were lovely. I have to say, pudding week was my favorite week on Bake Off. I do like a rich pudding, and they certainly, you know, let us have those, that's for sure, with creme brulees followed by cheesecakes. Delicious things.
Oh, I remember that week. You did the most delicious creme brulees, didn't you?
That's right. Yeah.
And didn't Nadia, was that the week she reduced down things like cream soda and things cream like soda. That to get the intense flavour rather than use an essence?
That's right, yeah. It was cream soda, and I think one was lemonade, something like that, and probably one more. Some quite out there ideas. I seem to remember saying she had to boil these, you know, a litre of lemonade or whatever for hours in order to get a very small concentrated amount of it. It was a delicious week. I remember trying all the other bakers' baked cheesecakes, and they were fantastic.
Oh, yeah, that was one of your star baker weeks, Ian, so you're very modest not to mention it there. Jane, what did you make of this task? 12 mini cheesecakes, 2.5 hours, as Howard was just alluding to there, on the time. And the great thing is now, because there's just five of them, we really get a good idea of how they went about what they wanted to do.
I mean, I love a cheesecake, and I thought it, I really enjoyed Dessert Week as everybody else has, because it's very relevant to the sorts of things you bake at home. Mini cheesecakes, they should have been able to do it in 2.5 hours, I think, even having to make the biscuits. The trick is, I think, for these ones is not to overbake. And obviously we haven't had a chance to look at it in depth, but I tend to bake my cheesecakes in a water bath because it does help with the cracking. The cracking is always an issue. It looked like only one of them was doing it in a water bath. And I think that might have helped with some of the textures. I don't know what you guys think, but it is very hard to get them cooked and cooled and uncracked. Mind you, they were covering it and all sorts of stuff. You wouldn't have seen the cracks anyway. But I'm not sure they covered themselves in glory with their cheesecakes. I hope I'm not being mean there. I wasn't wowed by the results, and I don't mean to be unkind because I know how difficult it is in the tent. I don't know how you guys feel about that.
Yeah, I mean, Ian, we were told, weren't we, and Jane just mentioned that the tough thing here was about the cooling. If they rush, they can crack, and if they cool too slowly, then they might not set in time to support what you're trying to put on top.
Yeah. I mean, it was interesting, this whole business. I mean, I'm trying to think back to when we made them, and I don't think I used a bain-marie. I think I put a tray of boiling water in the bottom of the oven to try and sort of help in sort of respect of it cracking. But I thought Hermine's idea of baking them in the jam jars, I thought it was interesting. I thought that was a very good idea because then you didn't have any worries about the of getting them out. But ultimately, it didn't sound like it really worked entirely as she'd hoped, I guess, because Paul wasn't convinced by the base. But yeah, it was. There was. I would kind of agree with Jane. There was a lot of sort of, you know, okay jobs there. I thought David's looked quite good. I thought he sort of did a nice job of it.
Howard, just on Dave's, you know, that Ian mentioned there, they were sort of neat, looked good. I mean, the feedback he got was pretty strong. The custard middle was delicious. Jelly was thick, but, you know, not rubbery. A good job overall.
Yeah, I think it was a good job, and I did like the sound of the orange shortbread base. I thought that was quite interesting. I'd agree with Jane. I didn't feel that there were many of them that I sort of thought, oh, do you know, I'd love to try that. But ironically, the one that I would have gone for probably was Mark's, the vanilla and mascarpone with green raisins, orange liqueur and glazed apricot. And that almond digestive base. And I know that's got liqueur in there again. Yes, that's probably what's attracting me.
But Howard, he was told they were too big, that they weren't mini enough.
He was. And I think that's a problem sometimes, because I don't think we always get to see or hear the kind of full brief. And I think Paul said within the sort of judging, oh, they're not canapé size. And I hadn't got up until that point the fact that that's what they were supposed to be. I know that they said mini cheesecakes, but canapé is really quite small.
Yeah, just a note on Laura, perhaps, Jane, because hers didn't look so fantastic, but she ended up with pretty good feedback.
Well, I think it'd be something that I always say is, because we Howard and I, and probably Ian as well, judge an awful lot of baking things, especially at food festivals. And people turn up those glorious looking things that taste shocking sometimes, although you don't let them know. And I think I would always go for flavour and texture before the look. You need to have all three, but if it's inedible or it doesn't taste nice or the textures are shocking in the mouth, then it doesn't matter whether it looks like the Mona Lisa, you don't want to eat it. And I think Laura really scores on her textures and flavours. I mean, I know they did look a bit of a mess, but I thought the flavours sounded lovely. Honey and oat biscuit, vanilla and passion fruit cheesecake. What's not to like there? And yes, they said they were delicious. They were fantastic. The textures were all there. So I think she scored on flavour and texture and maybe just a bit... Just a bit messy. So good old Laura. I think she's looking like a new one for me for the final, I must say.
Hello, I'm Sam Pay.
And I'm Martin Zoltz-Austwick.
And we are the two hosts of a podcast called
Song by Song,
where we listen every week to a track by the musical artist Tom Waits. You might know him for his gravelly voice. Very nice. His appearance in films, but also his multi-decade spanning career involving blues, jazz, and all sorts of other kinds of experimental music.
So we're basically like a book club for Tom Waits. And if that sounds like your cup of tea, you can find us at songbysongpodcast.com or wherever you get podcasts. At that point, you kind of felt Laura had got off to a pretty good start, but no one else had particularly covered themselves in glory. As we headed to the technical challenge, and Ian, this was two Sussex Pond puddings, and have you made these in the past, and can you tell us a little bit more about suet pastry? It's not something many people might be familiar with.
Yes, I used to live in Sussex, so I'm very enthusiastic about them, and I have made them, and I did a lot of sort of like, what's going on sort of moments when Laura seemed to have a bit of experience with making suet, but generally the whole business seemed to totally floor them. And I have to say, it's a weird idea putting a whole lemon in the centre of, especially quite a small pudding like those ones. But I think they're delicious. I love them. Really. I mean, I love suet, I have to admit. It's almost one of those things you feel you might be slightly ashamed of. But I think it's lovely.
Ian, for those that don't really understand or know what suet is, can you explain to us?
Suet is one of these ingredients that looks desperately unpromising. As I think Peter knew what it was, traditionally a meat suet is the fat that surrounds the kid. I thought just the kidneys, but I think he said the kidneys and livers of, I think traditionally cows, if I'm not wrong. So it really doesn't sound very nice, but it does make a delicious pastry, I think.
Jane, what's your experience with suet?
To be honest, I haven't used it much. I've never made a pudding like this, but I use it in dumplings quite a lot. And I'm with Ian. It is delicious. I kind of ditched it 2 or 3 years ago when my son turned vegetarian and tried to sneak it into mincemeat and things, but he wasn't having any of it. But I think it's absolutely lovely. It just adds flavour. You know, I put lard now in my pastry quite a lot, along with some butter. No, some of these animal fats, and apologies to all you vegetarians and vegans that are listening, there's no doubt about it. We've tried to move away from fatty meats, but in doing so, we've removed a lot of the flavour, and suet is some of that fat and adds gorgeous flavour to a lot of things. It wasn't surprised me that people hadn't made suet puddings, because it is one of those things that's probably my generation. What surprised me is they didn't have the first clue about steaming times. I make steamed puddings a lot, but sponge puddings, and an ordinary 1.5 to 2 pint pudding will take 1.5 hours to cook, to steam. And if you're doing it with suet, you could reasonably expect that pastry is going to take a bit longer than that. So Prue said 2 hours. Didn't give him much time for the rest of it, but, you know, it was only knocking up some pastry. Are puddings out of fashion? I don't know, because they're delicious. I love a steamed pudding. It's a great, easy, make it ahead of time and warm it through pudding. And who doesn't like that on a cold winter's day with a load of custard cream and ice cream added? You shouldn't be made to choose, I don't think. I was surprised that, one, they didn't know how to wrap a pudding, two, they didn't know how long to steam them for. But I don't know, call me old-fashioned, I think.
Yeah, Howard, they were struggling at different points here, weren't they? There was a lot of that looking around at what other people might be doing, and you know, people struggling with string. We saw Dave go last into the steamer and be first out, and that seemed slightly inevitable what would come from that. And we had these, you know, shots of all the bakers just sitting there whilst they were steaming, looking not quite sure what to do with themselves.
Yeah, I did feel sorry for Dave on this one, because at one point I think there's something wonderfully old-fashioned about kind of wrapping a pudding and putting the little pleat on top. Now, I was impressed that I think only Laura knew how to do the little pleat. Probably Amin may have known how to do it. But Dave tried to tie the string around his pudding and having the pudding basin upside down. So, of course, it's going to slip off that way, because the pudding basin has a little ridge around which the string needs to sit underneath, and you hold it that way up. I don't know why I'm demonstrating on Zoom, because nobody can see. But yes, oh, bless him. Yeah, it's probably something that once somebody points out to you that is quite easy to understand. But if you've never done it before, then clearly it is a bit of a dilemma how to deal with it.
Yeah. Well, they ended up with quite varying results, none of whom Ian possibly again covered themselves in glory. No. But we had everything from, you know, incredibly leaky, all over the plate situations to, you know, something that resembled what it was supposed to be that we'd seen on the kitchen table as ever with Paul and Prue. But even Laura, who ended up winning, didn't really get particularly good feedback.
No, it was interesting. I mean, a lot of those ponds burst their banks, didn't they? It was a pretty unimpressive scene on that Gingham Ultra this week. The one or two people who's actually held together, but I think everyone had at least one of their puddings burst open before they would before they'd been tried, and that was all down to the lack of steaming time. It didn't look pretty on the table in the suite. So which I guess makes a good technical challenge almost. But I guess though, in some ways, you want a variation of qualities. And this week it was kind of more all bad, really, wasn't it?
It was. Can you imagine how dull that must have been in the tent, though? They've got 2.5 hours. There must have been so much sitting around just watching something steam.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't see that on telly, of course, in the edit, but oh my goodness me, you could have got your knitting out, couldn't you?
Those quiet moments are quite unnerving, aren't they?
Because they
don't happen often. And you're just sort of twiddling and hoping, and you know, okay, you make creme anglaise, but I don't think I've ever made a creme anglaise, but I don't think it takes terribly long.
No, it really doesn't. No, it really, really. Really does. It's only a custard, isn't it? So that would have filled 10 minutes. Mm. And then there's just a lot of watching things steam. Interesting, though, but I don't think I'm going to be rushing to make a Sussex pom pudding.
Oh, really? Oh, no, it made me want to get cracking in one. In fact, I think I'm just looking behind me. Yes, I've got a poster on the wall, Puddings of the British Isles, and Sussex Pond is up there.
Oh, I can see your poster. Sorry, viewers or listeners, you can't see Ian's poster, but it's got 11, I think.
11 puddings up there.
11 puddings up there. All of them look jolly gorgeous.
My kids have been challenging me to sort of go through the list. And it has been a while since Sussex Pond, but you know what? I think suet puddings could be coming our way quite shortly.
Yeah, time to crack out the lemon and the suet, I think.
Mmm. Howard, there was a moment where, I'm trying to remember who it was, someone was moaning about not being told how much milk they're supposed to add.
It was Amin, I think.
Surely at this stage, week 8, you're in Bake Off, you should be leaning on some experiences, Jane, then here with what you should be expecting to add?
Yeah, absolutely. I never weigh or measure my milk or my water in my pastry. It's a sort of touch and feel sort of thing. And similarly with bread, very often, I very rarely do unless it's for a class. And people desperately need to know. You don't need to be told how much milk to add to pastry, I don't think. I mean, she did wind me up a bit, but she's going, does anybody eat it in 2020? Why would she do it to me? Well, there were four other people in the tent struggling as well, and then not even the quantity of milk. I thought, yes, I love her. I mean, she's an absolutely fantastic baker, but she did whinge a lot during the technical session.
Yeah,
maybe she's having a bad day.
I don't know what that business was as well. What she was pounding in the bowl. I've never made suet pastry by needing to pound something in a bowl.
No, absolutely. It should be a light touch with suet pastry. Otherwise, you're going to end up with something vaguely resembling concrete.
Yeah, she is funny with her casual sort of way. Like, she just doesn't care what's going on. It's just like casually bashing away at this pastry. Like, ah, it's just Bake Off. It's only the quarterfinals.
Well, she's doing something right, isn't she?
Clearly so. Yeah, exactly. Maybe that casual sort of attitude is kind of helping keeping her cool. And thus, it's helping her along. But you wouldn't think so at times.
She is amazing. She is amazing. She is fantastic. But she obviously Sussex Pond pudding was not to her liking.
No, clearly not.
And when we got to the end here, Howard, of the technical challenge, it wasn't clear who was going to leave the process. I was fearing for Peter, to be honest, at this point.
Yeah, I think Paul said he's sitting right down at the bottom, which it must. I'm glad that Peter wouldn't have been privy to that conversation, because that would have really not filled you with much confidence. I mean, out of five bakers left, and you are right down at the bottom. It's very demoralising.
Dessert week for me. I'd rolled my roulade the wrong way, but I don't think I'd done had a particularly bad job of it and fortunately survived. But when I saw the show when it was aired, I found that I was pretty near the bottom. And I thought, oh, well, that completely passed me by. Normally you have a pretty good idea. So it's interesting when you watch back the comments. Thank God you don't know them at the time, I would say. So, yeah, I'm with you, Howard. Poor Peter would have been devastated.
Well, let's move on to the showstopper, which was certainly the highlight of this week's episode. And Jane, if you've referred to certain parts of this series as being accessible to viewers, it felt particularly inaccessible to me as I was watching this. It was rather incredible. These jelly art design cakes, 4.5 hours they were given, and wow, they came up with some incredible bakes in that time.
Well, yes, I always say, you know, some things are over the top and inaccessible. But you know what? I mean, it was stunning. And they did the most extraordinary job, all of them, for their jelly. And it was interesting to see the way they attacked them. But unlike the Sussex Pond pudding, I am desperate to have a go at this. I mean, you need quite a lot of equipment, I think. All those bits that look vaguely sort of medical, don't they? But I just thought they did the most amazing job. And I've seen it on Instagram, as many of us probably have, and thought, oh God, I could never attempt that. But it didn't seem to phase any of them. So I think I might give it a go, because it was, wow, it really knocked my socks off what they did. I thought, as showstoppers go, this was right up there. And something, if you can afford or get hold of the equipment, is something we could possibly all have a little go at Christmas time. I just thought they were beautiful. I could rave about it, but I'm going to shut up now because I'm running out of superlatives.
No, Jane, I would agree with you. I thought these showstoppers, I think, were some of the most beautiful creations I've seen come out of the tent for a long time. It was really and a great variety. I mean, I've never heard of it as a thing whatsoever. And I sort of, you know, if I'd been in the tent that year and been sent that challenge, I'd be like, what's this about? But I think they blew me away what they created.
Howard, Jane referred there to needing quite a lot of equipment. You definitely need to get hold of a syringe. Are you familiar with the syringe in your kitchen for baking purposes? Because this was liquid jelly being injected into set jelly. Is that right?
It was, yeah, and it looked. I mean, it did look incredible, didn't it? I thought it was stunning. I think we were talking last week. We did an event, and we're talking about the Great British Bake Off did a colouring book, and you could just imagine that some of these creations would warrant being in something like the Bake Off colouring book because they were so impressive.
Well, who's leapt out to you most, Howard, then? I mean, we obviously saw Hameen end up as star baker, and she got the most terrific feedback when she did take hers up for her Japanese poppy. She was told beautiful, absolutely gorgeous. Was hers the one that leapt out to you the most?
I thought I did love Hameen's. I thought it was, very, very impressive, but I have to say my favourite was Dave's. I just thought the colours and that sort of slight Art Deco sunburst, and it just looked absolutely fabulous. I think the only problem to me with Dave's was with what he'd put underneath. So he'd done this kind of beach scene and then decided to do a sort of chocolate fudge cake or something and a clotted cream mousse. And I don't think either of those particularly gave that kind of summer beach feel to me. I think it just needed something lighter and more summery underneath. But the finish of that jelly was just astounding.
Yeah, I mean, he actually ended up, Ian, with slightly contrasting feedback, almost like stepped in to stop Paul criticising at one point, it felt. But visually, was that the one that appealed to you most, Ian, or was there another one that you liked the look of?
Well, it's interesting. The simplicity of Dave's did appeal to me. In terms of the design, it was just a strong, clear design. And so I think if I was going to do something like that, then that's how I would have done it. But I think Hameen's just... I'm trying to think how to describe it, whether it looked like... To call it looking like a painting would almost be underselling it, because obviously it's three-dimensional. It's more of a sculpture. I would love to have seen it in real life and sort of looked at it from all angles. Just incredible. Really, really beautiful. So, hats off to Dave for, a great, strong, clear look. And, you know, I mean, photography is my usual thing. And I always think a good picture should actually be quite simple. So you can see straight away what the subject is. And I think sort of, that's kind of the approach Dave took with his jelly.
So, Jane, we've spoken there very enthusiastically about what Dave and Hameen produced. Was it fair to say Laura's also deserves some positivity from us?
Yeah, absolutely. I thought it was a clever idea doing the little koi fish and moulded it. And I think, her flavours again were nice. If she'd perhaps just neatened up around the outside. I mean, that's where Hameen wins, doesn't she? She makes it look perfectly finished, like it's come out of, as Paul said, a French patisserie. And Laura's just looked a bit scruffy around the outside. But I loved Laura's as well. I thought the idea was pretty sound. And I'm just talking jelly here now. And I quite like Mark's. I think he went too mad going two layers. It would probably be better had he concentrated on one layer of jelly. And the one I was really disappointed in, and I genuinely thought Peter was probably going home, was Peter's, because having done a wonderful Christmas something or other in past weeks, this Christmas idea was like, oh, snow globe cake, yeah, that's a nice idea. And then it just looked pastel and a bit insipid. So I like the idea of the flavours, but he's was down at the bottom for me, looks wise, and I'm just talking the jelly now. Peter's was the most disappointing for me. I've got them in a list here. I've got Dave, Hameen, Laura, Mark, Peter, and that's how it's been all the way through. And yeah, Peter was for me down at the bottom this week, sadly.
Yeah, Howard, it was clear it was going to be between Mark and Peter for who was going to depart 2020 Bake Off at the quarterfinal stage. Were you uncertain, like me, who was going to go at the end? Because Mark's, I mean, I've written down here that Paul referenced it was like concrete. You know, it was supposed to be a mousse. It was more like a ganache. It was, bit damning at points, the feedback you got.
It's difficult, isn't it? Because I think sometimes, you know, at the beginning of a bait, you get an introduction about what the brief is. And Matt said that at the beginning that the judges were looking for a baked sponge element. And then Mark decided not to do a sponge. He was doing a dacquoise, so a meringue with nuts in it. And then we only found out part of the way through that mousse was a required element of it. So I don't think we always understand what the brief is and whether people have been very sort of loyal to the brief or not. So, but I think putting aside the fact that he did a dacquoise rather than a sponge, I think it was that the bake itself, split mousse, overbaked dacquoise, rubbery jelly, which is not a great combination, really.
I'd have it every Sunday in my house, Alan.
Yeah. No. In some ways, Ian, did you feel that maybe Peter was slightly lucky to find his way through to the semi-final because, you know, Mark had been pretty solid and strong in some of the recent weeks, and had he had even a, you know, perhaps one of his more average weeks, then I think Peter would have perhaps been on his way.
Yeah, and no, I'd agree. I'm sure there'll be many cries on social media about Mark was robbed and Peter should have gone home. Because, I mean, Mark was second in the technical. Yeah, I think Peter was lucky to stay, to be honest. I thought he was a clear one to go to the final. But, yeah, a lot of doubt was creeping into my mind last night.
Howard, I did notice on the showstopper before we come to you for your Howard Tump that Laura was wearing gloves for this one. Is that just something that, you know, makes it much easier to handle? Is that why she went for the gloves, do you think?
I don't know. Laura seemed to be taking quite a different approach to things this week. So she made a point of saying that she'd imported her agar-agar from Australia. And I thought, I don't know why you'd do that. Anyway, I googled Australian agar and it comes up with a cricketer. So I don't know. I don't know any reason why she was doing things in a different way. So the gloves might have been part of this. I import my agar-agar from Australia and I make a showstopper wearing gloves. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think she was getting hold of Ashton Agar, the Australian cricketer, who is part of the Australian national team at the moment. And nor was she trying to be a magician with those white gloves. I don't know if she was going to pull a rabbit out of the jelly at one point when she was wearing those. Now, we have to move on to Howard's hump. So, Howard, what took place in this episode that caused you to have a hump about it?
Oh, do you know, I'm going to get into trouble with Jane on this, but it is this business of suet and gelatin. I just think we need to move on a little bit from having meat in desserts. I don't think it's fair on vegetarians, pescatarians, and anybody who doesn't eat pork or beef. Gelatin, personally, I think sometimes if it's used wrongly, it can have a bit of an unpleasant taste. Suet, you can get vegetarians through it. So I just think, you know, if I'm having dessert, I really don't want that to be my meat course, but that's just a personal thing. Absolutely fine. If it's tasty, you know, put it in a suet pudding that's got meat in it, fine, or a pie or whatever. But when it comes to puddings, as in dessert puddings, I'd leave it out, actually.
Ian, on that poster behind you, which you've got in your kitchen of these great British puddings, how many of them do you think Howard would now be excluded from getting involved with on the grounds of gelatin or suet or similar?
Yeah, that's interesting. There is a fair bit of suet in there, I must say. It's interesting, though, Howard. After I cooked a particularly dodgy jam roly-poly about 10 years ago, my wife has basically banned me from using meaty suet in the house. We're all slightly scarred from trying to scrub this pot, but meaty suet had leaked all over. So I tend to use a lot of veg suet myself, despite not being vegetarian. But yeah, we've got spotted dick up there. Obviously, I think that's often got suet in. Jam roly-poly, Sussex ponds,
I suppose strawberry trifle, that could have gelatin in. Yeah, and the other sort of crumbles and pavlovas and things like that. So I think you're off the hook there. But yeah, four out of the, what have we got? Four out of the 11 could have meatiness in them.
All right, well, we leave seven for us to think about for classes, perhaps. So we will talk about that when we finish recording. Jane, four people left. Are these four that you thought probably would get towards this stage? I'm still clinging on to the fact that I predicted Laura back in week one, but you've still got a few of your thoughts in there, certainly Peter.
Yes, Peter, I did sort of mark for the final, didn't I? And I think it's really hard to pick between the four of them now. I was thinking about it over a cup of tea and thinking, oh, maybe Dave. No, Dave's too good. I sort of thought he would be in the final. And Hameen, of course, hasn't put a foot wrong. Laura, I think, is going from strength to strength. And, well, based on the last couple of weeks, I think I might be a little bit concerned for Peter, but not that I want any of them to go. I think they're, what, can we have a four-person final? Sadly, no, we can't, but I wouldn't want to put, in the old terms, I wouldn't want to put a cigarette paper between any of them at this stage. I think I'm going to just sit back and enjoy the semi-final and the final. It's all gone so quickly, hasn't it? What are we going to watch now? Lockdown has happened, and hopefully, we'll have lifted by the time, or the week after the final. I don't know, but I love them all. So I think it's been a very, very, very even series, probably more so than I've ever seen before. So I know I'm not putting money on any of them. It'll be interesting to see.
Well, when you talk, Jane, about such an even series, we mentioned last week we had seven different star bakers in the 7 weeks. Now, obviously, someone was going to get a second star baker, and it was Hameen. Ian, have you got a thought of who might come out victorious at this stage, or is it too close to call?
It's interesting, yeah, just, I mean, as we were saying, how close it is. And yeah, I'd agree with Jane, I can't remember it ever being this close. It's interesting, I did think Laura, because she was... I don't know. She did at the same time seem quite chaotic to me with the way she went about things. And I thought that would be a bit of a downfall for her. But actually, no, she's obviously done well. But yeah, I mean, especially after last night's performance, Hameen is looking the strongest for me. But yeah, I think what's interesting is anything could happen. Every week is obviously a new week. And yeah, just depends what happens on that particular day or that particular weekend.
I think it's interesting because you've got some very different personalities. So I think Laura is quite she can at times come across as being quite emotional, and that is because she puts her heart and soul into her bakes, and I think she wants to do really well, and it's fantastic when something goes well for her. Peter has had a bad week, and I think if he can put that behind him and sort of get a week when he shines, then I think that's going to put him in a much better position for the final. I think it's about having the maturity to get over a week that's gone particularly well and gone particularly badly. And I'm hopeful that Peter seems to have that old head on young shoulders, which will achieve that.
Yeah, he might be enthused by surviving a week where he didn't do so well, because he obviously has the talent, as we've seen week after week during the series. Well, thank you so much to all three of you for joining us for the podcast today. I can't believe we've only got two left to do, the semi-final and the final. Everyone has got online classes coming up, so please do visit us at bakewithalegend.com/online-classes. We even just put up a brand new one with yourself, Howard, custard creams and fig rolls with two classically British biscuits. So do check that one out on the 22nd of November. Ian, the day before, has got his opera cake class. And Jane, the coming weekends, has got her Florentines and Biscotti class. So we are looking forward to all of those. If you are thinking about a virtual Christmas party or a get-together of friends, we'd also love to hear from you. We do offer private virtual events. Well, thank you once again to Ian, to Howard and Jane, and we will be back next Wednesday.
just heard a Stripped Media production.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.